Buen sábado. I always wonder what the interpreters would do, translators, if I start speaking Spanish. Do they translate to English then? Oh, they do? Oh, I was just wondering. I just thought I'd try that out. Or they're probably correcting my Spanish, which is more logical. Good afternoon to everyone. Thank you very much for the special music. It was absolutely gorgeous. We're very privileged to have such beautiful music. And welcome to everyone, especially our visitors. Especially there's a young lady sitting about three quarters of the way up in the middle row that will be totally embarrassed that I point her out. And no, she's just glaring at me now. But if Alicia, welcome, and all other guests who are here today. Today I would like to begin my sermon with an article that will set the stage for the topic that I would like to discuss today. And it's entitled, Why Millennial Women Are Burning Out at Work by 30, from Forbes.com. Millennials are also called Generation Y, which were born between 1980 and 2002. The article begins, a growing number of young professional women who seem to have it all are burning out at work before they reach age 30. Men are twice as likely as women to advance at each career transition stage. One rationale is that men are more likely than women to do things that help their personal well-being at work, thus negating burnout. According to Captivate Network, men are 25% more likely to take breaks throughout the day for personal activities, 7% more likely to take a walk, 5% more likely to go out to lunch, and 35% more likely to take breaks just to relax. It seems relaxation is something millennial women have never experienced. One reason that women are burning out early in their careers is that they simply reach their breaking point after spending their childhoods developing well-rounded resumes. These women work like crazy in school and in college, and then they get into the workforce and they're exhausted, says Melanie Schrafer of the youth marketing blog YPulse. Many also didn't think of their lives beyond their initial first job. They need to learn life as a marathon, not a sprint, says Kelly Cutrone, president of the People's Revolution PR and author of If You Have to Cry, Go Outside, and Other Things Your Mother Never Told You. YPulse's Schrifler adds, they expected things to be better now that they have arrived and made it, but instead they're starting over on the bottom rung and still striving. You can't see the end of the tunnel because there are so many twists and turns. It's impossible to see what life will be like in 20 years these days. It's hard to look just even 3 and 4 years into the future. They don't know what they're striving for, which makes it really hard to move forward. In defining burnout, psychology today states the following. Burnout is not a simple result of long hours. The cynicism, depression, and lethargy of burnout can occur when you're not in control of how you carry out your job, when you're working towards goals that don't resonate with you, and when you lack social support. If you don't tailor your responsibilities to match your true calling, or at least take a break once in a while, you could face a mountain of mental and physical health problems. Unfortunately, the image of burnout is becoming common in our day. It began back in World War II. Battle fatigue was a common malady. It resulted from prolonged stress on the front lines without relief. And the officers soon learned that if they would pull their troops back and give them a break and give them some rest and relaxation, they might be more effective in battle. And indeed for us, doesn't life appear to be a battle at times? Sometimes we're gaining ground, sometimes we're holding ground, but many times we feel we're losing ground with no thought of how we can get out of that cycle, and it takes a toll. And burnout is not limited to career burnout. We can be burned out in a variety of ways. We could have parent burnout. Parents burn out for many reasons, with the most common of the nature of the job itself. Raising children is a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week, 365-day-a-year consuming task, which is relatively thankless. Parroting is a skill that can never be mastered, and once it begun, it never ends. Our children, no matter how old, are still our children, and we feel a responsibility towards them, don't we, parents? It may be the most important job we'll ever have, but even if we live long enough, we may never know how well we did. We know that raising children has its rewards. The silent satisfaction, for example, when we're holding our young child or young toddler quietly in our arms, or the pride we feel when someone compliments our son and daughter on something they did, or the joy we feel when our children, no matter how old, accomplish a goal. But these precious private moments don't often outweigh the distress caused by the seemingly constant discussions on what to do and what not to do, where to go and where not to go, how to behave and how not to behave. How can we help them with their education? How can we plan for their future? How can we help them off at college? How do we help them start, get on their own, and not try to be meddling? The decisions and the questions go on and on. So what causes parental burnout? The first cause is when parents constantly are striving for perfection from themselves as a parent. And as a result, they set themselves up for frustration, guilt, and especially anger. So when we set ourselves up as super moms or super dads, when we seek perfection from ourselves as parents, we are setting ourselves up to lose, because none of us, not one of us, is going to be perfect. The second cause for parental burnout is holding ourselves responsible for some things we cannot control. There are so many things about our children we simply cannot control, especially as they age. We can't control sometimes as they grow older who their friends are or what they're doing when they're not in our sight. And we can't be with them as they grow 24/7. The amount of control we have diminishes with age. And frankly, we should want that. We want our children to grow and be independent and have maturity. Now, they may not make the decisions we want them to make, but they need to take ownership of their life and the path we choose. And that may cause us to burn out. We can have relationship burnout. This can include marriage, but also friendships or relationships with family matters, members. Relationships can also burn out. There are many reasons why relations do burn out. Sometimes it's a problem with health or financial issues. Sometimes we have differences with our children or with our parents. We have unmet expectations, etc., and they go on. And these relationships can go under stress and ultimately burn out. And we can see these behaviors at times because we see resentments being built in a relationship and the irritability and with anything the other person does. The lack of humor or laughter, of having fun with one another, turns into cynicism and sarcasm, becoming more and more the standard of conversations. And finally, results in withdrawal. It's just not worth being around the other person. Finally, we can have spiritual burnout. Yes, even those in God's family are susceptible to burnout. We might be finding that coming to church is more of a chore than an opportunity. When we come to church, we see the same people with seemingly the same problems. We hear messages reminding us of our shortfalls, our shortcomings, how we're not doing this, and how we're not doing this, and that. And we can find the message we hear to be frankly depressing. We're just not good enough. We'll never be good enough. God's going to punish this world, so we better shape up or we're going to be punished with them. So we may begin to think, why even try? We could talk to someone about it, but our chance of our conversation hitting the gossip mill just isn't worth the risk. So we keep it to ourselves, and we get ready to go to church and put on our Sabbath attire as it's some sort of uniform that requires us to put on a standard of behavior that's surreal, and then we go to church. Dr. Herbert Freudenberger coined the word burnout, describes the person who's burned out as someone in the state of fatigue or frustration brought about by devotion to a cause, a way of life, or relationship that failed to produce the expected reward. Our rewards in the future. Though we do know that living God's way of life now does bring rewards as well. But the constant daily struggles, seeing our fallibility, dealing with all the lives and pressures of society that is put upon us. We see a society that's ever increasing in knowledge and running to and fro, and it takes a toll on us. We see our failures. We see our shortcomings. We see others enjoying life much more than we are. And we find ourselves being burned out emotionally, mentally, and spiritually. But at this time, we probably take a step back and we rationalize and say a good Christian just can't experience burnout. And we're reminded of what's written in 2 Timothy 1:7. You don't need to turn there. We know this scripture. For God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and love and of a sound mind. So we begin to think and rationalize burnout is for the weak. We can't possibly be burnt out. Certainly, no one with God's Spirit could be burnt out. No one with a relationship with God could be burnt out. Really? Well, let's look at some examples. Turn to Job 30, verse 16. Job 30, verse 16. And I'll read from the New Living Translation. A number of the scriptures I will read from the New Living today, and I'll let you know. It reads better with some of the things I'm trying to cover today. Job 30, verse 16 says, "And now my life seeps away. Depressions haunt my day." This is what Job is saying. "At night my bones are filled with pain, which gnaws at me relentlessly. With a strong head, God grabs my shirt, he grips me by the collar of my coat, he has thrown me to the mud. I'm nothing more than dust and ashes. I cry to you, O God, but you don't answer. I stand before you and you don't even look. You have become cruel towards me. You use your power to persecute me. You throw me into the whirlwind and destroy me in the storm. And I know you're sending me to my death, the destination of all who live." I would say Job was experiencing some level of burnout. What about David? Let's turn to Psalm 69, verse 1. What about David? A man after God's own heart. Did he have burnout? Psalm 69, verse 1. Again, the New Living Translation. Psalm 69, verse 1. "Save me, O God, for the floodwaters are up to my neck. Deeper and deeper I sink into the mire. I can't find a foothold. I am in deep water and the floods overwhelm me. I'm exhausted from crying for help, and my throat is parched. My eyes are swollen with weeping, waiting for my God to help me." Yes, even men of God experienced burnout. It's not a new phenomenon. Just the name is relatively new, the term burnout. There are two examples in the Bible I want to direct our attention to for the rest of this message when discussing the topic. We're going to deal with Moses and the children of Israel and Elijah soon after destroying the prophets of Baal on Mount Carmel. So to start with, what are the signs of burnout? First sign of burnout, we deprecate ourselves. We deprecate ourselves. And the definition of deprecate means to belittle or to disparage oneself. In other words, we put ourselves down mentally. We begin to tell ourselves that all we seemingly do is make mistakes. We don't count. We're not good enough. We're just worms. We have no value. And these thoughts just keep repeating themselves. When we start to go down that path, we are heading for burnout, whether it's in our jobs, in our relationships, or in our relationship with God. As it notes in 1 Kings 19, and we'll turn there, 1 Kings 19, when Jezebel the queen hears what's happened to her prophets at Mount Carmel, she became incensed and sent a messenger to Elijah, telling him that she was planning to kill him. In verse 3 of chapter 19, Elijah feared for his life and ran a day's journey into the wilderness. Elijah went into hiding, and waves of depression started to crash all over him. He became so upset that his view of the world became distorted. He was blinded to the great things that just had happened. He ran away into the wilderness and finally collapsed under a juniper tree. Let's turn to verse 4 of 1 Kings 19. But he himself went into a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a broom tree. And he prayed that he might die and said, "It is enough. Now, Lord, take my life. I am no better than my fathers." Note, he is saying about his ancestors, he is no better. One of the quickest ways we could deprecate ourselves is comparing our lot in life with others. And that's what Elijah was doing here. What he says is he's no better than his ancestors. When we start comparing ourselves to others, we are establishing the road to burnout. What we tend to do in comparing our life with the accomplishments of other people is to tell ourselves, "I'm not doing enough. I'm not good enough." We say to ourselves, "Look what they have. Why don't I have it? I've worked just as hard. I tried just as hard. Why are they benefiting and I'm not?" We find ourselves comparing our problems and our trials with the relatively easy lifestyle we think somebody else is having. It doesn't mean that person really doesn't have the trials or problems, but we focus instead on what we don't have as compared to what they do have. We compare our talents and gifts and think how meager they are compared to the talents and gifts of the person next door, the person in our office, our neighbors, our friends. Yet the Bible notes they were not to make comparisons. Turn to 2 Corinthians 10, verse 12. 2 Corinthians 10, verse 12. And again, I'll read from the New Living Translation if you would follow along. 2 Corinthians 10, verse 12. It states, "Oh, don't worry. We wouldn't dare say that we are as wonderful as these other men who tell you how important they are. But they are only comparing themselves with each other, using themselves as a standard of measurement. How ignorant." In comparing ourselves to others, we tend to look at what they do and compare it to where we're at. And as a result, we second guess our life choices. One of the worst things we can do to start comparing ourselves with our expectation is the danger of comparing how our life has been and what we haven't had. When we start looking at life the way it turned out and not what we expected, rather than dealing with what we have and appreciate it, we are setting ourselves up for burnout, which leads me to the second cause of burnout. Atlas syndrome, the unrealistic desire to control everything because we believe it's our responsibility. Atlas syndrome, an unrealistic desire to control everything because we believe that is our responsibility. I would like to read an excerpt from an article from the newspaper, The Daily Independent, entitled, "When Being Perfect is Just Too Much, Britain's Super Dads Start to Blow a Fuse." A leading British psychiatrist at the Priory Clinic, the highly respected hospital favored by celebrities needing treatment for addictions, has identified a disturbing condition affecting thousands of men, the Atlas syndrome. While a generation ago, fathers simply had to focus on being breadwinners, modern dads have to cook, do the washing up, change the nappies as well. And for many, the strain is becoming too great. The illness has been diagnosed by Tim Cantifer, one of the medical directors at the Priory. He named the condition after Atlas, the titan of Greek mythology, who was forced by Zeus to support the sky on his shoulders. "Atlas syndrome is a physical condition caused by too much stress," he said. "It's a blown fuse which happens to people who are too strong in the face of adversity." According to Cantifer, Atlas syndrome strikes men who are trying to work the unworkable, leaving victims feel exhausted, anxious, unfulfilled, and depressed. In his words, it's the curse of the strong. Atlas syndrome is where one is acting as if the whole world is resting on his or her shoulders. It's not limited to men. It can impact women as well. It can impact anyone who feels they have to make sure everything, even to the smallest minutia, has to work out right. And we can see this example with Moses when expressing his frustration with God over the Israelites. Turn to Numbers 11, verse 10. Numbers 11, verse 10. And again, I'll read from the New Living Translation if you would follow along. Numbers 11, verse 10. Moses, in verse 10 it says, Moses heard all the family standing in the doorways of their tents whining, and the Lord became extremely angry. Moses was also very aggravated. And Moses said to the Lord, "Why are you treating me, your servant, so harshly? Have mercy on me. What did I do to deserve the burden of all these people? Did I give birth to them? Did I bring them into this world? Why do you tell me to carry them in my arms like a mother carries a nursing baby? How can I carry them to the land you swore me to give to their ancestors? Where am I supposed to get meat for all these people? They keep whining to me, saying, 'Give us meat to eat.' I can't carry all these people by myself. The load is far too heavy. If this is how you tend to treat me, just go ahead and kill me. Do me a favor and spare me of this misery." I would say that Moses at this point was pretty burnt out. A person with Atlas syndrome thinks, "I have to hold everything together. I have to work everything out. If it's to be, it's up to me. I have to do it. I have to work this out." When we feel like this, we are setting ourselves up for burnout. When we cannot be the manager of the universe, that is a burden that God never intended for us to carry. Yet how many of us try to do it this way, and we carry all the burdens upon us? A third cause for burnout is emotional reasoning. Emotional reasoning. That is, through our own emotional reasoning, we exaggerate our problems beyond what they realistically are. We overemphasize what's wrong in our lives and ignore the blessings that God has given us in our lives. We focus on the negative rather than on the positive. When we do, we are setting ourselves up for burnout. And that's what happened to Elijah. Turn to 1 Kings 19, verse 10. 1 Kings 19, verse 10. States, "So he said, 'I have been very zealous for the Lord God of hosts, for the children of Israel have forsaken your covenant, torn down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. I am alone am left, and they seek to take my life.'" Note the second half of the verse where he says, "I'm the only one left and they're trying to kill me." Can you hear the pity party here? God, I'm the only person in this whole universe that lives for you and loves you, and they're trying to kill me too. The ultimate pity party. Just a few days earlier, Elijah experienced a great miracle, where he prayed and the fire came down from heaven. It was a huge miracle. The people saw it and fell down who saw it and worshiped God. That kind of thing will wear one out emotionally. We need to remember that positive things, as well as negative things, can wear us out emotionally. Elijah was so drained emotionally, spiritually, physically, he couldn't focus on reality. He couldn't get the picture right. Have we ever been that tired? Have we ever been so worn out that we can't think straight? We can't really see what's happening, and we think the world is starting to cave in on us. The Chicken Little complex. The sky is falling. Not really. However, when we're drained and fatigued and worn out, we don't see reality as it is. Our perception becomes our reality, even though our perception is flawed. Elijah, in his emotional state, forgot that a few days earlier, the nation turned back to God. In fact, God tells him a little later in chapter, all along, Elijah, there were 7,000 true believers. Even when the nation went the wrong way, these people never bowed down to an idol. Elijah, you weren't the only one. There were 7,000 others. Elijah was over-exaggerating the problem. Inherent in our exaggeration of the situation we find ourselves is reasoning with our emotions. Emotional reasoning is when we listen to our feelings rather than ascertaining the facts. We focus on what we feel than what is real, what is the truth. Emotional reasoning goes like this: I feel it, therefore it must be true. Our feelings are not good indicators of truth. However, we live in a society that emphasizes feelings almost above everything else. Psychologists tell us you need to get in touch with your feelings. And that's true. We do. Any area if we don't understand our feelings or we're hiding our feelings, we need to look at it because it's an area of denial and it inhibits our growth. It takes control out of our lives. So we do have to get in touch with our feelings. We do need to understand how our feelings impact us, the way we view things. We do need to understand them. But it isn't enough. There's something more than getting in touch with your feelings. It's getting in touch with the truth. It's the truth that changes you, not our feelings. It's the truth that gives us a solid, successful, significant life, not feelings. Christ did not say, when you know your feelings will set you free. No, he said, when you know the truth will set you free, in John 8, verse 32. The truth sets us free. It's the key in liberating our life from hang-ups and hurts and bad habits. The truth will set us free. However, at first, it may make us quite miserable. Why? Because we generally don't like facing the truth about ourselves. So we hide, we ignore, we justify. We don't like to face truth about relationships, so we throw insults at each other. We don't like to face the truth about life, about death, about reality, about the future, about the past. So we make up all kinds of stories in our minds. The truth sets us free, but it can make us miserable before we get to the freedom that truth provides. So far, we evaluated three causes of burnout: self-deprecation, to belittle ourselves; the Atlas syndrome, acting like the whole world's burdens on our shoulders; and emotional reasoning, that is, relying on our feelings, which we can exaggerate to evaluate situations. So what's the devastating impact of burnout? Well, it's that we give up. We give up our dreams. We give up our goals. We give up our aspirations. When we start to burn out, we are effectively forfeiting our future. We start to forget about our goals, our dreams, our aspirations. At the extreme, we become so emotionally, physically, and spiritually drained that we just want to give up, to stop caring. In Elijah's case, it noted in verse 4 of 1 Kings 19, he prayed that he might die. He had enough. He threw in the towel. He gave up. He stopped caring. This happens in relationships all the time. If we're in a relationship where we're constantly having conflict, does not take long for that relationship to be drained of love and energy, and the resulting impact is that the parties stop caring. I hate to burst anyone's bubble, but John Lennon and Paul McCartney were not right when they stated, all you need is love. In a marriage, love is not all you need. It takes more than love. It takes commitment. It takes character. It takes integrity. It takes maturity. It takes an unselfishness to make a marriage work. We can't build marriage based on an emotion of love. True love, what the Bible talks about love, yes. But the emotion of love, which society points out to. Love is an important ingredient, but it's not all we need. We need character. We need maturity. And we need commitment. These are things we can have control over. And if we're honest with ourselves, we will admit that we can't always control our feelings. However, what we can do is control our commitment. We have a commitment. Even though we don't feel like going to work, we get up and we go. We have a commitment. Even though we feel our families do not appreciate what we do, we still provide. We have a commitment. Even though we might be weary right now in well-doing, we still give. We still look out for others. We cannot allow our feelings to override our commitment. So when we're willing to give up on our commitment, so when we're willing to abdicate our goals and our dreams, that's a sign of burnout. Elijah said he prayed that he might die. I had enough. It's just not worth it. I'm ready to throw in the towel. I want to die. And some of us may be at that point today. We might be thinking, I'm ready to check out. I'm ready to check out of my marriage. I'm ready to check out of my career. Some of us could be thinking, I'm ready to check out of the burdens of this spiritual journey. I'm just too tired. What do we do when we hit that point in burnout? What do we do when it doesn't look like there are any answers? Any place to turn when you say, I don't think I can handle one more day of this. One more day of pain. What do we do? The good news is the Bible tells us that Elijah and Moses were just like us. They were human beings. They were not supernatural. God used them in miraculous ways, but they were just normal human beings. In the Bible, we can specifically see how God dealt with Elijah's and his bout with burnout, and we can see how he came out of it. So here, let's take a look at what God told Elijah and Moses to do. And if we will do these things, there is hope. Through the examples of Elijah and Moses, we see four ways to battle burnout. Number one, the first way to battle burnout, rest. Take a break. This deals with the physical sign of burnout. This is God's first step, his prescription. If we turn to 1 Kings 19, verse 5, it says, Elijah had just said, Lord, take my life. I'm no better than my ancestors. I've had enough. Then it goes on. 1 Kings 19, verse 6. Then he's at verse 5, actually, and we'll go on to verse 6. Then as he lay and slept under the broom tree, suddenly an angel touched him. He said, arise and eat. Then he looked, and there by his head was a cake baked on coals and a jar of water. So he ate and drank and lay down again. And the angel of the Lord came back a second time and touched him and said, arise and eat, because the journey is too great for you. This is God's first step in handling burnout. Elijah just said he wanted to die. And what did he do? What did the angel allow him to do? Rest and eat. We have to take care of the physical issues that we're facing us. And sometimes it's rest and taking a step back. Notice what God did not do. God did not launch into a lecture. Get a life, Elijah. Remember what happened 2 days ago? What's your problem? Get your act together. You're such a child. Get rid of that mood. You are in a bad attitude. Nope. God didn't preach to him. God didn't yell at him. The first antidote was sleep and eat. God understands our body better than we do. In Psalms 127, verse 2, you don't need to turn there. It states, it is useless for you to work so hard from early morning till late at night, anxiously working for food to eat, for God gives rest to his loved ones. Sometimes in this life, the most spiritual thing we can do is to sleep and get rest. Vince Lombardi, the famous coach of the Packers, and sorry, Liz, I couldn't find a quote from Tom Landry, so we'll stick with Vince Lombardi, once said, "Fatigue makes us cowards of us all." It's true. When we're tired, it's difficult to handle complex situations. When we are worn out and beat, we are unable to handle the stresses and pressures that would normally bother us. Sometimes one good night's rest changes our perspective. Taking a break from a routine is also rest. But even more so, sometimes we just need to step back and breathe. Help Guide gives some suggestions on simple things we can do to combat burnout. One, start the day with a relaxing ritual. Rather than jumping out of bed as soon as you wake up, spend at least 15 minutes meditating, writing in your journal, doing some stretching, or reading something that inspires you. Number two, avoid healthy eating, exercising, and sleeping habits. Three, set boundaries. Don't overextend yourself. Learn how to say no. Number four, take a daily break from technology. Number five, nourish your creative side. Creativity is a powerful antidote to burnout. Second way to battle burnout, share our concerns, our frustrations, our discouragement, first with God, and then, as appropriate, with others. This deals with the emotional side of burnout. We dealt with the physical side, now the emotional side. Revealing your feelings is the beginning of healing. You're not going to get well, and you're not going to get feeling good again until you learn to express the hurt and the pain that may be in your heart that you've been holding in. Any area of your life that you can't talk about is effectively out of control. If you can't talk about it, you probably can't manage it. So the second step in burnout is face those frustrations. First, talk to God about it. Don't whine and complain to other people. First, go to God and say, "God, this is the way I feel." And express our feelings. Lay them out. 1 Peter 5, verse 6 through 7. 1 Peter 5, verse 6 through 7. It states in 1 Peter 5, 6 through 7, "Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that at the proper time he may exalt you, casting all your anxieties upon him, because he cares for you." We need to have an open discussion with God what is on our mind. Our anxieties, needs to be honest, an honest discussion with God. As we saw earlier, Moses did. And I'd like to go back to that with this in mind, of being honest and open with God. Back to Numbers 11, verse 10. It states, Moses, and think of it in this context. Moses heard all the family standing in the doorways of their tents whining, and the Lord became extremely angry. Moses was also very aggravated, and he said to the Lord, "Why are you treating me, your servant, so harshly?" That's pretty open with God. "Have mercy on me. What did I do to deserve the burden of these people? Did I give birth to them? Did I bring them into this world? Why did you tell me to carry him in my arms like a mother carries a nursing baby? How can I carry him to a land you swore to your ancestors? What am I supposed to get meat for these people? They keep whining to me saying, 'Give me meat to eat.' I can't carry these burdens of the people by myself. The load is far too heavy. If this isn't how you intend to treat me, go ahead and kill me. Do me a favor and spare me of this misery." Moses was frustrated. What he's saying was not rational. I'm not saying it was. Yet he expressed his inner feelings to God. And what did God say? Did God chew him out? Did he strike him down? Let's go to verse 16. The Lord said to Moses, "Bring me 70 of Israel's elders who are known to you as leaders and officials among the people. Have them come down to the tent of the meeting that they may stand there with you. I will come down and speak with you there. and I will take some of the power of the Spirit that's on you and put it on them. They will share the burden of the people with you, so you do not have to carry it alone. God provided a way that Moses could share his burden. Moses didn't have to bear it alone. He had others to rely on. Indeed, and after we go to God, we may also need to go to others. Talk to others, our spouse, a good friend, the ministry, maybe even a professional. Someone to talk through what you're going through. God encourages us to do so. Hebrews 10, verse 25. And I'll just, don't need to turn there. We know this scripture. It states, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together as the manner of some, but exhorting one another, so much more as you see the day approaching. We generally tend to focus that this scripture is about coming to services. But why? To encourage one another. Life is hard, and we should be encouraging one another. And we shouldn't be in our own little cliques, ignoring people who are having troubles. We have something to give to everybody, our experiences, and we can encourage one another. So if you're feeling a little down today, are you feeling a little stressed out, uptight, overloaded, go to God first. Then seek the encouragement of one another. And you'll notice I said, I stressed as appropriate. We're not to go to someone to be a dumping ground of our emotional reasoning or our feelings. But when we go to someone, we should seek someone who can help us through our thoughts, to be willing to listen as well as speak. Third way to overcome burnout, refocus on our calling, on our goals, on our dreams. Refocus on our calling, on our goals, and on our dreams. We need to get the eyes off on ourselves and focus more on the meaning of life and where are we going. Why are we here on this earth? What is our purpose? Where are we going? When we are focused on the here and now, on the pressures we face, on the mistakes we have made, we are heading to a life of ups and downs, of burnout. Thus, we need to have a fresh awareness of God's power and presence in our life. After Elijah got his rest, he voiced his frustration to God, and what did he do? Let's go to 1 Kings 19 again, verse 11. 1 Kings 19, verse 11. Again, I'll go back to the New Living Translation, 1 Kings 19, verse 11. And it says, the Lord said, go out and stand by the mountain in the presence of the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by. And then a great and powerful wind tore the mountains apart and shatters the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, there was an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake came a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire came a gentle whisper. When Elijah heard it, he pulled his cloak over his face and went out and stood at the mouth of the cave. Why did God do this? He gives a spectacular hurricane wind. He gives an earthquake. He gives a firestorm. Then he speaks in a still, small voice. What was God doing? He was reminding Elijah of his power. I'm in control, God says. I am sovereign. He was saying, focus on me, not your problem. He was reminding Elijah of his power. Then God speaks in a gentle whisper. No doubt it was calming to Elijah, a compassionate voice to speak with Elijah. And what did God whisper? The last half of verse 13. Then a voice said to him, what are you doing here, Elijah? When we are going through burnout, it's easy to forget the big picture. We're so focused on ourselves and our problems, we tend to forget the incredible blessings we have in our life, our calling, our family, our friends, to have a job in this economy, to experience the beauty of the sunset, to have each other in this journey. We can become so lost when we become so focused on one thing, our own feelings. 1 Corinthians 2, verse 9. 1 Corinthians 2, verse 9. It states, as it is written, "Eye has not seen, nor ear heard, nor have entered into the hearts of man the things that God has prepared for those who love him." In times of burnout, we need to take a step back and remind ourselves what we're here for, the incredible calling we have. Will we make mistakes? You bet. We're human. Will we stumble? For sure. Will we fall? Absolutely. But with God's Spirit, we will not fail. Listen to God's whisper. Remind ourselves of what we are doing here on this earth for our purpose. If we expect to hear the gentle whisper of God, we must be silent. In other words, we must clear our mind of the clutter that life puts on us. Often our inability to hear God is not about God's failure to speak to us, but our failure to listen to the gentle whisper. The fourth way to overcome burnout, re-engage, get back on the horse. When we heard the adage, to get on the back on the horse means to get on a horse that we've been thrown off. And according to the Urban Dictionary, and I've never known there was such a thing as Urban Dictionary, but it does exist. The adage, get out back on the horse, means to attempt the same challenging action after failure. Apparently derived from the old adage, you have to get back on the horse that threw you. In other words, we don't give up. We don't focus on ourselves and how burned out we are. We re-engage. We don't walk away. We don't give up. Why? Because God never meant for us to come out of burnout so we could become selfish, to become absorbed with self. That is what got us in trouble in the first place. God didn't put us on this earth to live for ourselves. So thus, the way to come out of burnout is to get back on the horse, to re-engage. Re-engage ourselves in our jobs. Re-engage ourselves in our relationships. Whether it's spouse, children, family, friends, community, people here in this congregation. We need to start with little steps, though. Don't be discouraged at the progress. It will take a while. And as we re-engage, we don't do the same things that got us burnt out in the first place. But we don't give up either. We find the good in what we're doing, but we don't give up on our goals, our hopes, and our dreams. And we can see this with Elijah. God had him get back in the saddle. Let's turn to 1 Kings 19, verse 15. 1 Kings 19, verse 15. States in 1 Kings 19, verse 15, the Lord said to him, "Go back in the way you came and go to the desert of Damascus. When you get there, anoint Hazael, the king of Aram. Also anoint Jehu, the son of Nimshi, king over Israel. And anoint Elisha, son of Shaphat, from Abel-Meholah to succeed you as prophet. Jehu will put to death anyone who escaped the sword of Hazael. And Elijah will put to death anybody who escaped the sword of Jehu. Yet I will reserve 7,000 in Israel, and all those knees who have not bowed down to Baal, and those mouths who have not kissed him." As we see here, what did God do? Rested, move on, and now get back. Get back to work. As we have seen in this message, burnout can happen to individuals who had a direct relationship with God. They even had direct conversations. Yet the challenges of life took their toll. No doubt, one time or another, burnout will happen to us. We're not superhumans. We're not Iron Man or Iron Woman, where we put on a suit and we're impervious to any attacks, where we have an external shell that no one can see in. We are fallible human beings. We need to keep an eye on the signs of burnout, self-deprecation, embracing the Atlas syndrome, reliance on emotional reasoning. We need to monitor ourselves to see if we're giving up on our goals, our hopes, and our dreams. And if we are, we rest, take a break from the stresses we are dealing with. We need to share our concerns first with God and, as appropriate, with others. We need to focus on our calling, our goals, and our dreams. They're still there. And re-engage. Get back on that horse. To close, I would like to read a quote from Ralph Marston, a writer and publisher of the Daily Motivator, that summarizes our journey. Rest when you're weary, refresh and renew yourself, your body, your mind, and your spirit, then get back to work.